You're listening to a Toronto Centre podcast. Welcome. The goal of TC Podcasts is to spread the knowledge and accumulated experience of global leaders, experts, and world-renowned specialists in financial supervision and regulation. In each episode, we'll delve into some of today's most pressing issues as it relates to financial supervision and regulation. The financial crisis, climate change, financial inclusion, fintech, and much more. Enjoy this episode.
Hello, everyone. I'm Demet Çanakçı, a Senior Program Director at Toronto Centre. This podcast is based on a recent Toronto Centre Supervisory Guidance Note. TC Notes are meant to provide practical guidance to financial sector supervisors on key supervisory challenges. My guest today is Clive Brewer, the author of the TC Note on Supervision of Stress Testing by Financial Institutions, which is published this month. Clive has over 40 years' experience in supervision, regulation, and related financial sector issues. He is the chair of Toronto Centre's Banking Advisory Board, participates actively in Toronto Centre board meetings and discussions, and edits the Toronto Centre Notes series. Clive, thank you for taking the time to talk with us today.
Well, thanks a lot for that, Demet, and a pleasure to be here to discuss this important topic with you.
Thanks. In this note, you discuss how supervisors should review a financial institution's stress testing and how this might feed into supervisory interventions. Let me start by asking why financial institutions should run stress tests at the first place.
Well, Demet, I think that's because stress testing is a key element of good risk management by financial institutions. So stress testing should help a financial institution to understand better the risks it is running, to set its risk appetite, and to determine its financial resilience, namely how much capital, solvency, liquidity it should be holding. And to do this, a financial institution should consider a wide range of possible outcomes that might affect its current and expected future financial positions, covering both sides of its balance sheet. So stress tests should help it to quantify the potential impact of different stress scenarios on its current and future financial positions, to assess whether it could absorb possible losses and meet liquidity needs that could occur under these various scenarios and stresses, and thereby enable a financial institution to identify better the risks it is taking and how much capital and liquidity it needs to hold against these risks.
Thank you, Clive. A follow-up question on that. Can you elaborate on what types of stress testing and scenario analysis are used?
Yes, I think there are perhaps two dimensions to this, Demet. First, and important to recognise, is that different financial institutions will face different risks. So a financial institution stress tests should reflect the specific risks that it faces, be they credit, insurance, market, interest rate, liquidity, and so on. For example, an insurer specializing in motor insurance will face somewhat different risks to an insurer specializing in building and contents insurance. And similarly, a bank specialising in lending to the agricultural sector will face different risks to a bank specialising in mortgage lending. A second key point about various types of stress testing is the different types of stress tests that can be undertaken. And probably the simplest one that a financial institution could use would be what is usually called a sensitivity test, whereby the financial institution estimates the impact of one or more moves in a particular risk factor or across a small number of risk factors on the future financial condition of the financial institution. So, for example, a financial institution could simply assume that equity prices will fall by 20% or that interest rates will increase by 3 percentage points, or that motor insurance claims will increase by 30% or whatever, and then apply one or more of these changes two relevant balance sheet items. Such sensitivity tests can provide a reasonably fast and relatively easy to implement initial assessment of sensitivity to a given risk factor and identify certain risk concentrations. But these sensitivity tests do not relate these single factor shocks to an underlying scenario, event, or real world outcome. At the other end of the spectrum, scenarios can be constructed involving simultaneous movements in a wide range of risk factors. And there are two main types of scenario that financial institutions might use. One is a historical scenario, which would reflect changes in risk factors based on movements that have been seen in previous historical episodes. And these are often used to develop macroeconomic scenarios based on shocks that have been observed in previous economic recessions. And another type of scenario would be a hypothetical scenario based on shocks that are thought to be severe and plausible, but have not yet occurred in a country. And this approach could be used, for example, to develop climate-related scenarios. And a financial institution could then model the ways in which these various types of scenario might be translated into stresses across a wide range of risk factors, which in turn might have an impact on the financial position of the financial institution. Now, each of these types of scenario has its benefits, and certainly you might expect a larger financial institution to use a variety of approaches depending on the nature of the risks that they face.
Thank you, Clive. All sounds very good. Could you please briefly talk about the lessons learned from stress testing? In other words, what can go wrong in stress testing?
Well, Demet, it seems from past experience that quite a lot can go wrong. And this might be for various reasons. So one of those could be poor scenario and stress test design. Some financial institutions may use overly optimistic scenarios and impose insufficiently severe stresses, including an underestimation of the potential severity and duration of stress tests. Or the stress tests used may not stress all of the key vulnerabilities faced by a financial institution, or indeed, in some cases, financial institutions may not run stress tests at all. Another issue is whether a financial institution pays sufficient attention to possible feedback loops and market-wide stresses. So they may take inadequate account of system-wide interactions and feedback effects caused by market reactions to stressed conditions. They may also not take sufficient account of interactions, for example, between their solvency position and their liquidity position. And a good example of that would be the failure of Silicon Valley Bank last year, where it seems reasonably clear that the bank itself did not run stress tests which considered what the impact might be on its funding of perceived weaknesses in its profitability and capital position. Other issues around stress testing, more about governance and organizational structure. So the boards and senior management of financial institutions may not be sufficiently engaged in defining scenarios and stress tests, in challenging the models and assumptions used, in discussing the results of stress tests, and last but by no means least, acting upon those results, particularly in terms of the capital and liquidity planning of a financial institution. In terms of organisational weaknesses, one of the things which tends to be seen in many financial institutions is that stress testing may be performed as a somewhat isolated exercise by the risk function or finance department of the financial institution, with little interaction with business areas, or alternatively, each individual business area may run its own stress tests, but with only very limited integration of the results of those tests across the firm as a whole. There may also be somewhat more technical problems, and they may be due to shortages of data or the necessary IT systems to run effective stress tests, or they may be about inadequacies in modelling techniques. And in particular, if a financial institution is overly reliant on using historical statistical relationships to assess risks, they may assume that risk is always driven by a known and constant statistical process, so the future can be predicted from historical relationships. But as shown, for example, in the global financial crisis, the severity and duration of stress indicated by previous episodes may not be a good guide for the future. And in some cases, as I mentioned earlier, historical data may simply not capture all the risks involved in new products or in the impact of events such as pandemics, climate change, or biodiversity loss. Perhaps just coming back to a moment on the failure of the Silicon Valley Bank last year, even thinking about that in terms of a very simple single factor sensitivity test, one of the problems was that the bank's own stresses of deposit withdrawals were insufficiently severe because they didn't take enough account of the fact that a large proportion of the bank's deposits were non-interest bearing and on-demand deposits, but they were concentrated among a depositor base of technology and life science companies, that nearly all of the deposits were above the maximum coverage limit of the deposit insurance scheme, and because of advances in technology and digital finance, the deposits were easily accessible and movable 24 hours a day, every day of the year. It's also the case that Silicon Valley Bank was over-optimistic in terms of the assumptions it made about the availability of alternative funding sources or about the stability of its deposit base, and it paid insufficient attention to interactions between liquidity and capital. So in the case of Silicon Valley Bank, market concerns about the realized and unrealized losses on the bank's holdings of fixed income securities led to deposit withdrawals on a scale that would have required the bank to begin selling its portfolio of what are called held to maturity securities, and that in turn would have triggered the realization of the losses on that portfolio as a result of rising interest rates, and that in turn would have almost wiped out the bank's capital. And that interaction between funding and capital was not captured in the bank's own stress testing.
Many thanks for this excellent summary of what can actually go wrong in stress testing, Clive. Now I would like to move on to the supervision of stress testing. In a way, you already responded this question, but let me go ahead and ask it for further elaboration. Why it is important that supervisors should supervise stress testing by financial institutions?
Well, thanks for that question, Demet. I think it's important that supervisors should supervise stress testing by financial institutions for two main reasons. The first is that such stress testing should provide useful information to supervisors, as well as to financial institutions, about the potential consequences of the main risks facing a financial institution, and provide information about the financial resources that might be required to absorb losses should those shocks occur. And that can help supervisors to assess the inherent risks in a financial institution, the vulnerabilities generated by a financial institution's business model, the capital solvency and liquidity required to support a financial institution, the quality of a financial institution's capital solvency and liquidity planning, and in particular the quality of banks' individual capital assessments and insurers' own risk and solvency assessments, and also the quality of a financial institution's recovery plan. And then the second main reason why supervisors should concern themselves with stress testing by financial institutions is that the way in which a financial institution runs, governs, and uses its stress tests can provide useful information to supervisors about the quality of that financial institution's governance and risk management.
Thank you, Clive. You also discuss supervisors' approach to stress testing in the TC note in more detail. Can you highlight the most important or key areas in performing supervision of stress testing?
Yes, thank you for that, Demet. The Toronto Centre note discusses four areas that supervisors might most usefully focus on. The first of those is a reasonably high-level review of what a financial institution is doing with regard to stress testing. So what scenarios and stress tests, if any, does a financial institution use? Do they cover the main risks run by the financial institution? How severe and plausible are they? And do they include any second round and feedback type effects? The second main area is governance. What is it that the board and the senior management actually do in relation to scenario analysis and stress testing? What are the policies and procedures for such analysis and stress testing? What is the involvement of all three lines of defence? So business units, risk management, and internal audit. And what resources and expertise does the financial institution have for running scenarios and stress tests? And the third area takes us more into the technical competence of a financial institution. Does it have an adequate and proportionate technical approach to scenario analysis and stress testing, including its data, IT systems, modelling, validation, review and challenge, and so on? And that might sound like a rather daunting technical area for supervisors, especially where they are supervising larger and more sophisticated financial institutions. So there may be cases where the supervisors should call upon expert assistance to help them with their assessment of that technical competence. And finally, the question of how a financial institution is using the results of its stress testing. So, as I mentioned earlier, is a financial institution actually making use of the results to improve its identification and understanding of risks, to monitor and assess its business activities, to improve its decision making, and to assess the adequacy of its capital and liquidity?
Thank you, Clive. My final question is very relevant to the last point you made. What do we do with the results? More specifically, how can stress testing be used in supervisory response and intervention?
Yes, thanks for that, Demet. Well, clearly there's a distinction here. I've talked a little bit about what financial institutions should do with the results. There's been a question of what supervisors should do as a result of reviewing the way in which a financial institution runs scenario analysis and stress tests and the results of those stress tests. And it may be that the supervisors look at that and say, well, there's nothing to do here at all. It looks as if a financial institution is doing a good job and is making a good use of its own stress tests in terms of its capital and liquidity planning. Equally, however, it's possible that as a result of its assessment, a supervisor might decide to take a range of actions, assuming they have the powers to do so, including requiring a financial institution to improve its governance and risk management, for example, where its approach to stress testing has revealed weaknesses in those areas. It might require a financial institution to use a wider range of scenarios and to run more stress tests, not least to capture a wider range of the risks facing the financial institution. A supervisor might require a financial institution to use more challenging scenarios and to run more severe stress tests to capture more severe but still plausible scenarios and stresses. A supervisor might require a financial institution to improve the technical aspects of its scenario analysis and stress testing. And depending on the results of the stress testing, a supervisor might require a financial institution to hold additional, what is called Pillar 2, capital or liquidity, or to amend its strategy and business activities so as to protect the financial institution better against the possibility that an adverse scenario or stress materializes. More generally, supervisory authorities could usefully consider whether they have issued adequate rules and guidance on scenario analysis and stress testing by financial institutions. They might consider whether it's possible to publish examples of good and less good practice as observed from the supervisory assessment of stress testing practices across financial institutions. And finally, supervisory authorities might also want to consider how the use of stress test results can be incorporated into a risk-based or indeed any other approach to supervision as used by the supervisory authority. And that is because stress testing can be helpful in terms of the assessment of a financial institution's inherent risks, an assessment of its governance and controls, and an assessment of the adequacy of its financial resources. So quite a long list there of the various interventions that a supervisor or supervisory authority might choose to make in response to the stress tests run by the financial institutions that it supervises. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Clive. This has been a fascinating conversation, and many thanks for your time, much appreciated. And I encourage participants to read the TC note, which can be found on our website. Please address any questions or comments to publications@torontocenter.org. I'm here today with Clive Brio, and you have been listening to another episode of TC Notes podcast series. Thank you for joining us today, and stay tuned for the next episodes. Thank you.